Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And we have a guest who needs no introduction, but he's got an introduction.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never!
I do hateful things for which people love me, and I do lovable things for which they hate me. I'm admired for my detestability.
It is a newspaper's duty to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
I don't like that fellow.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Abdul-Hakim Shabazz of Indie Politics fame is in studio.
It is just always a pleasure to be here, my friend.
Ladies and gentlemen, the public radio equivalent of, let's see, William Daniels, the black guy from Chasing Amy, Bo Bridges, Gene Kelly, and Go-Go Gophers.
And those are your pledge dollars at work.
And it's pledge drive week. Yes, we brought him in during pledge week. So 1-800-233-0020.
We will pay you money to never have him back on again.
Or we've gotten those notes. Or go to WFYI.org/give. By the way, when Abdul pledges, if you see me on the street, I'll tell you what he writes in the memo box, because we can't do it here.
Well, here's the funny thing. There's the old Richard Pryor show, and I'll be good.
Yeah, well, with a 7-second delay like NBC. Yeah,
exactly. He was doing like a telethon for the United Negro College Fund.
Actual organization, millennials.
Yeah, and the bulk was to raise money for African Americans and scholarships. But
right.
But the phones weren't ringing.
Oh,
they were all silent. It says, "Oh, I'm sorry. This is the Send the Negroes Back to Africa Fund," and then the phones just start lighting up.
Oh, and with that in mind, I found this is not going to be a part of your intro, but I've added this because we have talked about this is a scene from a movie, but I know you have heard this theory in your household on Thanksgiving. Hold on,
it's racial.
Well, expand.
I bet. Now check it out. The white ball dominates everything, right? Knocks out the yellow ball, the red ball, right? And the game's over when the white ball drives the black ball completely off the table.
That's of course a scene from Boomerang. Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, David Alan Grier, former Abdul in the Morning guest,
yes,
David Alan Grier.
Guy's really sharp, like Shakespearean trained actor.
Yes, he is. There was a
he has a public radio connection.
Go ahead.
He was in back in 1978-79 when I was just a little kid. They had the Star Wars public radio adaptation with Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels, and David Alan Grier, a very young David Alan Grier, played Wedge, who was Luke Skywalker's friend, who ends up, of course, getting killed in the Death Star battle.
Yep. So back when Abdul and I first met, and we've been talking about this a little bit because we're both involved in Indie Bard Fest, which is happening October 17th through the 27th at the District Theater on Mass Ave. Go to IndieBardFest.com for tickets and information. Abdul is playing King Henry IV, also known as
HIV.
Also known as
the HIV in charge.
And of course, the notorious HIV. And I'm playing Falstaff.
And just so you all know, I am doing Henry in blackface. So I'm going to be forewarned.
That's Abdul. Send all hate mail to indiepolitics.org.
But send your pledge dollars to WFYI.
Thank you. So we were getting off topic. No. So when Abdul and I first met at that radio station up at 96th Street, what was common practice, because he was on AM, and there was the morning show, Smiley's morning show was next door. They often would bring in comics, as would you, but quite often if they brought in somebody of note, we would kind of peek in and go, hey, when they're done, could you bring him over to us? And we got that with Sammy Terry. We had that with Johnny Witherspoon, and we had David Alan Greer.
Yes,
and it was, what of course, was the nice balance is you, well, I'm going to word this here. No disrespect to the morning show, but you got the morning show questions. You know, you got questions about In Living Color and, you know, kind of the more obvious stuff. Abdul and I, we like to dig deep.
And we were for some of the obscure references and things that they had done.
Right.
Like in the past.
We had, yeah, you brought up Star Wars. I brought up Soldier Story and Streamers. You know, the more, I guess it's more serious work before getting the real money with In Living Color.
And I want to say, if I remember the conversation with David Alan Green, I think this was actually on the air. He had mentioned it. Remember the guy who was in The Heat of the Night?
Howard E. Rollins. He was the star of a Soldier Story.
Yeah, Howard Rollins. And there was a big question about Howard Rollins and which did he putt from the green or the rough?
Yes.
And Dave Alighieri just did this
without pause.
Without pause, like the biggest flaming, flamboyant Howard Rollins. And Sosie and I were just like, wow.
Didn't know that.
Didn't know that.
No clue. None at all. So, yeah, no 6 degrees of separation. That's a play in a film, anyway.
Or much separation for that.
Much separation. So, how you doing, man?
Doing well.
It's been hours since we've seen each other. So, yeah, we're in rehearsal, and it's been fun. I have to tell you, folks, because Abdul and I have known each other for a long, long time. One, because this is your first play in how long?
Oh, gosh, like since 2003, 2004.
Wow.
I mean, I've done stuff on stage, but, you know, the comedian stuff and
gridiron,
but as far as, like, you know, lines and blocking and that
memorization,
sort of thing, yeah. Like, it has been a long time.
Since your Illinois days, back when your roots.
My roots, my real roots.
When Abdul first got here, he was told, why don't you embrace your roots? And he goes, I do, Illinois, Chicago.
That's where I'm from.
But no, it has been fun to watch Abdul in rehearsal because we never see the working process. We see the final product or hear the final product quite often, and we're both working.
It is interesting to not having done that in a while, sort of be back in that groove and swing of things. And number two, because you and I both have very busy, full of stuff because of
scheduling and juggling
what we do for a living, is all the other guys, you know, who are professional actors. No, they show up, lines already done.
Yeah, they're really good.
Meanwhile, I hold my battle axe in hand and hold my script on the side.
We are the script in hand club. Yeah, we're the Linuses of the group.
We're the last two guys on paper.
So,
but I do not feel bad on that.
No, because, it's a process.
Yes, yeah, it's a process. Number two, it's been interesting working with a really good director, Glenn Dobbs.
Yes,
Glenn is just awesome and amazing director to work with. When you can still have your script in your hand and deliver the closing speech of Act One, and everybody's just like, wow,
yep,
and quiet, and your director's just like, clean up on aisle four.
Right. because we ran the bar scene a couple times, and he said he hadn't noticed. And it feels, but in our case, it feels like we're holding up like a sandwich board.
Yeah.
But it's, and the process, and actors go through this. It's the, well, I know them, I don't want to let this go because what if I don't? And that's,
yeah,
and in some scenes, that's the case for me. And I know that's the case with you,
yeah,
of we just, it's almost like kind of getting shoved into the pool or getting pushed out the nets. Go fly.
Yeah.
So,
but the good thing for me has been lately, and this is sort of the process of line memorization. There's the stuff that's easy to remember. There's the stuff that's difficult to remember. But not because the lines are difficult. You just kind of forget them because they're not necessarily part of a real big scene. So what I've been kind of doing lately is, okay, here's the stuff you know. You got that. So let's focus on the little small stuff and this line over here and this line over here. Then it all starts to come together. But
yep,
one thing I did do, and this will not shock you at all,
no,
is because, you know, I spend time at another radio station on the other end of Monument Circle.
Yes.
And so I made a point to record all my lines and upload them to SoundCloud
yep.
in a continuous loop so I can go to bed to the sound of my own voice.
We have, and yeah, I know it sounds like you, it's like sleeping with the textbook under the pillow. When I did a show called Avante years ago, back when I had to grow the mustache and play an Italian hotel concierge, basically. And I would put Fellini movies on or Antonio Italian cinema on in the room while I slept.
Like the Seven Deadly Sins?
No, good Italian films, not that nonsense.
That movie, you know, with that thing and that bus.
So the other thing, because this is a film talk show, so back in the XNT days with Abdul, either he or I would, or a caller, and it's especially funny because it was a caller. It's like, I saw this movie the other night. Maybe you guys can help me, because you know we're your film nerds on the radio. But he's like, it's an Italian horror film, and everybody's on a bus, and they're in a castle overnight, and it's the Seven Deadly Sins. And you know, you hear mad typing and scrambling, and people calling in and going, no, it's this. And then I remember you the closing music was already playing. We finally got an answer. I mean, it was that kind of thing.
The good old days, folks.
Yeah. So
never to return. No applause, please.
That's really okay. But we'll talk a little bit more about Indie Bard Fest in a little bit. So, of course, big weekend if you're a film fan and an NPR fan, because Downton Abbey, the movie, is open. So, yes, Abdul, there's a film of the series.
Okay.
You know, the child of Upstairs, Downstairs.
Yeah. A movie?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, apparently the Queen shows up.
How long?
2 hours.
That's like an episode.
Maybe, but now it's in theaters on a big screen.
You see, but here's a problem when you take a good television show and turn it into a movie. The television show starts to go downhill.
But the show's over.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So,
But that's like when they made Springer Ringmaster, the movie.
Really? Really? you're gonna draw that comparison? By the way, he's on TV now in the
judge's
role.
Yeah. Springer right. Ringmaster. Here's a better one.
Yeah,
the X-Files.
Okay. All right. There you go.
Yeah.
So two films and then a reboot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And?
I don't know. I didn't see it. If I didn't see it, I'm not reviewing it. So, and here's the other thing. So a little insider info. When I'm doing a play, that means my evenings are shot, because they're devoted to rehearsal. So I got up, and so then it's, what's the earliest film I can go to on Friday morning? And it's a fun group to see a Friday morning, 10:30 at Glendale with a group I have affectionately called the old, the unemployed, and the weird.
Hey,
or the Watchmen crowd.
At least it's not Watchmen.
Yeah, it's like, who else is at a movie theater Friday morning at 10:30?
So, no, but Friday's different, because Friday you can take the day off.
That's true,
Monday, but
it's opening day. So, yeah, Monday, well, that was a press screening.
Monday.
Well, the famous Watchmen press screening. I know. But so anyway, so it's you know, how early can it be? Because I got to come in here and we got to bang this out. And, you know, well, the weekend will start for you. I'm on the air Saturdays, so doing your favorite Saturday night show. Hi, JC. so anyway, I got to see the new sci-fi film Ad Astra.
Okay, because that is actually on my list of movies to go see. It kind of piqued my curiosity.
All right. Do you know what it's Latin. Do you know what it translates into?
Because I know what ad nauseum means, like.
Yes, that's you. Yeah. Now write it 100 times or I'll cut it. No, to the stars.
Okay.
So, as I wrote, and I'm going to get to some answers in a little bit. Yeah, this is, I had forgotten. How many sci-fi films have dad issues in them?
Thor.
Oh, we'll get to those. So this chalk up this
Contact.
One on two. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. This stars Brad Pitt as a famous astronaut. One of the character points is that his, like you, his blood pressure never goes up. Although I've seen Abdul twice, but he's that cool, calm, and collected, and he is sent on a mission to find his father, the great astronaut played by Tommy Lee Jones, who was sent out to Neptune for a mission 30 years ago, and they lost track of him, and now Pitt has been assigned to find him. So it involves a layover at the moon, and then a shot to Mars, and then going over. So it's a journey story. In fact, the film critic for Fresh Air compared it, made mention to Apocalypse Now, which I hadn't thought of. Well, Tommy Lee Jones is Kurtz, and Brad Pitt is Martin Sheen.
Okay.
Except...
Who's Marlon Brando?
He's the planet. So, you know, flaming ball of gas. So there's that. Donald Sutherland shows up a little bit. Yes, President Snow and the voice of Orange Juice. As a guy who knew the Jones character.
And Hawkeye Pierce.
And yes, the original Hawkeye Pierce. Yes, we've seen the meme with the three Hawkeyes, even though you should have four. Not Thor. But he shows up. Hey, Liv Tyler's in a film that involves space and it doesn't have a crummy Aerosmith ballad. So, you know, there's an improvement there. But it is a very moody piece of film. I would like to see your word on it because you like to make fun of the art films I like. And this is, well, there's no playing chess with death, but it's dad issues in space.
Okay, so playing chess, but is there a clown on a bicycle?
You're a clown on a bicycle. When in doubt, just say you're what the other person just said. That's the type of humor we have at the Soci House.
You see, because I saw the preview. It's like, okay, whatever. Then... I saw some more. It's like, okay, this looks interesting.
There's in the trailer, because there's a couple of moments, there's a couple scenes, one on the moon and another on a separate ship that turn it into a different genre for a little bit. There's, if you've seen the trailer, there's shootings and there's a car, there's a, you know, not a car, but a chase scene, which could be an action film, could be a Western. There's another one that's kind of reminds you that, you know, in space, no one can hear you scream. So there's moments of that, and they feel out of place, but I think that also breaks up what could be the monotonous tone. I got a feeling it'll open well and then have a big drop second weekend because this is not – it's not a Michael Bay film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a Christopher Nolan film.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
Where should I go see it?
Big screen.
Okay,
good sound, good... I would say pay.
Okay.
Pay. We don't do ratings here, folks, but Abdul is like, how much should I pay for this? Pay for it at night on a big screen with a good sound system.
Okay, because my lovely wife, for our 10th anniversary, got me a gift card to AMC.
So that'll knock it down in price a little bit. So,
Okay.
Now, does your one have the MacGuffin bar?
It can.
It shows up or no? But is there a bar there or no?
At our regular movie theater, actually, yes, there is.
Okay.
They just put one in.
All right, there you go. So you're set. You're even set.
Yeah.
So, but
and the reason why I ask is because where we are, we have a couple different movie theaters at our disposal. One serves alcohol, one doesn't, but it's still about 20 minutes to the Keystone Arts.
Which
cinema?
That goes without saying.
Yes,
go there. No, I would say as big a screen as you can. And you know, we know the ones in town that have a really good size screen and a really good sound system. But don't expect a slam bang. I liked it. I liked it. And it, when it gets to there's a particular moment where he's reading. Or he's watching a video journal entry by his father, and of course. The face, you know, it's one of those that it's clear, you can see through it. But then again, when he holds the face up to his face. So that's about as big of getting beat over the head with a message for the most part. But I did like it. It is a good, moody dad cinema.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would definitely check it out. And it's written and directed by James Gray, who's in the past has written stuff about, and I'm quoting the Fresh Air guy, stuff about not so much toxic masculinity, but his last film was The Lost City of Z, which kind of poked a little bit at the traveling adventure tale.
Okay.
You know, not Indiana Jones, but, you know, Kentucky Murphy.
More your Jewel of the Nile.
Something like that. But he did The Immigrant, Two Lovers, We Own the Night, The Yards, Little Odessa, very subdued films, and this is, you know, his biggest film to date, size wise. So, yeah, go check it out.
Okay.
I think you'll like that. I want to move on. I'm going to go to as soon as the credits went up, I wrote on social media, "What is your favorite sci-fi film with dad issues?" So let's go through a few of these, if we shall. Mark writes, "Forbidden Planet," also known as The Tempest in space. So. Anne Francis's dad, that's the problems there. our buddy Frank from Indy, Blade Runner 2049. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Of course, finally, Al from Indianapolis. Is Al still in Indy, right? Yeah, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably.
I have one.
What do you got?
Extro.
Oh, my gosh. Whoa. Whoa. That's an oldie but a good. That's early 80s. I don't know if it's like that was on video. I remember seeing that on video a long time ago.
Actually, if I may use another Windy City reference.
Sure.
I'm not sure if you guys had in Detroit. It was right before cable became prominent. It was like pay TV where you had to like the box with a little subscription
service.
Oh, yeah. Because we had two of them in Chicago. One was called On TV and one was called Spectrum. And this was on Spectrum. And the reason why I remember it, because A, I was like 10 years old. B, it was rated R. We were supposed to be watching
big deal.
Rated R films. And when the alien impregnates the woman, it's pretty obvious that he's impregnating the woman.
Right.
So that's why I remember Extro, just because of
that
scene at 10 years old.
You haven't watched it since?
It was... I saw a couple like trailer clips on like YouTube. Like, my God, that was crap.
Yeah,
and I remember the little movie poster. He wants to be just like Dad.
Right. God, yeah, I do remember that. So Al writes, yeah, Empire Strikes Back. Joe writes Forbidden Planet. Walter in Richmond, stop showing me gifs of Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element. Richard Probst, who's been at this show before, writes Leonard Part 6. Don't take a drink from Leonard. Lou Harry, our buddy Lou Harry, wrote Frankenstein. That's pretty good.
Or I would say Son of Frankenstein.
Well, Josh from Indy, Josh Malkak writes Chappie. You know, this is, of course, the gentleman that gave us one of our favorites. One of my favorite movie experiences with Abdul. Chappie is from the director of District 9.
Okay.
You know,
that's
also
right.
Known as some of my best friends are aliens.
Some of my best friends are giant prawns.
Is this futuristic South Africa? Is this Gary? What is this little Mogadishu?
Like, what are these? Well, actually, the way they look, those tent cities looks like Monument Circle.
How's your pizza? I'm quoting Mr. Shabazz's post from earlier this week. You know how he likes his pizza? Without the homeless.
Without the homeless and no side order of panhandlers, please.
Bill writes the Terminator. All of them or just the first one? John writes, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek movie, 2009. Kirk's father's a captain, also of Hemsworth, and a hero and dies valiantly. Kirk rebels and doesn't seem to want to live in his father's shadow, yet he is still compelled to duly be much like his father. Matthew Altizer writes, do you concur on that?
Actually, I was thinking more, does Spock have dad issues?
Well, he has no emotions. So I guess when it does bring up.
Well, I would say in the original Star Trek episode, Journey to Babel, you know, Spock and his dad, Mark Leonard, did not get along quite well. But eventually they reconcile in Star Trek IV.
There you go. Matthew Altizer, who's also been on the show, says Zardoz. Okay, now you're just being silly. Nick Oler writes Superman 1978.
No,
Brando was there for a check, and Glenn Ford was. It's nice to see Glenn Ford was still alive.
Yeah, Brando's just reading lines off a diaper.
No, I would say that to a certain degree, Man of Steel, because I'm like, oh, now this is the time you're going to tell your dad no? This is the time you're going to... No, actually, this is the time you're actually going to listen to what your father says, even if it is Kevin Costner as a Christ figure. Okay.
Stay where you are. Don't save me.
Okay, Dad. Mm-hmm. Great. He also wrote Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Remember, someday Jehovah begins with an I.
That's right. I seem to remember a bunch of family-based sci-fi movies from the 50s and 60s, but I can't seem to remember any titles at the moment. Thanks, Nick. He's an XNT caller.
Gosh.
Jared writes Star Trek in a couple episodes. We already talked about that. Robert writes Ex Machina. That was the, I don't know if that's, well, it's sort of dad issues. The guy who made the female robot,
yeah.
Alicia Vikander, and Oscar Isaac is that, that's kind of a mad scientist. That's a Freudian.
But by that logic, wouldn't iRobot have, like, daddy issues?
Probably.
Because Will Smith had an issue with the scientist who saved his arm.
Yeah.
And made him, like, part of a robot.
Man. Larry writes, the original day the Earth stood still. Faithless Bobby Benton's confused feelings for Klaatu
Niktu.
Right, were a significant complication in the world's potential survival. Taylor writes Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, When Your Dad's a Planet. Thank you, Taylor Martin. James writes Avengers Endgame. Yeah, Thanos throwing his adopted daughter off a cliff and torturing his other daughter, kind of dysfunctional. JR writes Empire Strikes Back. Josh Lingenfelter, who's... Okay, Josh writes, does Field of Dreams count as sci-fi? That's fantasy. And I did think about... I did think a little bit of Field of Dreams while watching this. And he also wrote Back to the Future. Sure. Yeah. Dan from Boston. Then why are you writing this? I've never seen it, but I assume Earth Girls Are Easy is one of those. No. It's just a silly...
Just a silly movie with the space aliens that they shave them down, and it's Jeff Goldblum and Damon Wayans.
And Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then up online, Sam Watermeyer, who's been here before, writes Return of the Jedi. Eric from Indianapolis writes Contact. I think I need to revisit Contact. I remember Mrs. Sosi and I kind of disagreeing on it. She was with the ending. I was not. You know. And then South Park made fun of it. And so...
Failure hours to find out that the alien was her.
And that's kind of... I mean, well, we know he's... That's the other thing with this film. You know you're going to get some Tommy Lee Jones time. You know, he's second billing. So that's not really going to come as a shock. It's just going to be how the scene is handled.
Yeah.
So I think I knew that going in. But apparently my sci-fi brain, when I saw Contact, just said, no, rejecting this. So I need to revisit
it. I never saw Contact at the movie theater. I rented it.
It's probably been... that long ago. Almost 20 years. So I will give it another shot when our show is over. Let's see. So actually a couple others.
No, don't forget your first Incredible Hulk film.
I defend Ang Lee's Hulk. Man, that's also some dad issues, especially when your dad's bearded, crazy Nick Nolte.
Who's like the absorbing man, which I still couldn't quite figure out the end of that movie, what the hell was going on.
Well, there was no sad hitchhiking music. I'm sorry. Eric wrote... let's see. Bill wrote Bill from Cincinnati, The Empire Strikes Back. We mentioned that. And it's at Cuddlebug Kaiju wrote Flash Gordon. Not Flesh Gordon.
We're
talking about the quarterback of the New York Jets and Tevia and Brewmeister Smith. Okay. Hey. And I'm sorry, Swedish Jesus. We love Max von Sydow. He's still, and your favorite owner. Yeah, your favorite book.
The young carpenter from Nazareth. I knew him. He died most painfully.
So anyway, yeah. So if you're in the sci-fi dad issues, there you go. Go check out that film. All right,
it's a great Father's Day gift.
It is a great Father's Day. So new on Blu-ray. I forgot. How are you on X-Men?
I have seen everyone. I did not see the last one.
Well, Dark Phoenix is now out on video. So
I know it's out on video. Part of me is just, I will bite the bullet when it comes to either Netflix or Amazon.
I love that these are, we used to say it's a rental, or now it's a streamer.
It's
I'll
a streamer.
See there.
Yeah, so. But as soon as I saw it, I was just like, as I tell my wife, old spider sense is kind of tingling on this one. I'm not quite sure.
How old is your Aunt May?
Yeah.
You like old Aunt May.
Yes.
Yes, I've seen those pictures. I'm terrible because I would like to date the current Aunt May.
I like my Aunt May's as octogenarians living in Queens and having boarding houses.
Rosemary Harris was inspired casting as the original Aunt May in the Sam Raimi Peter Parker films.
And actually, she kind of looks like the Aunt May from
She does. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's really, really good casting. But I still want to take Aunt May to prom.
And by the way, in the book, Aunt May always knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Wow.
There is a scene, not to go to, going off on tangents is what we do here.
That's all right.
Where they are standing like on a top of a building, just kind of, you know, just sort of looking out, having a conversation. And Aunt May said, Peter, what's it like to swing from building to building? And his jaw just drops.
Well, X-Men Dark Journey is out on video, as is the PBS miniseries from Ken Burns, Country Music, as well as... Now, I thought this was already out on Blu-ray. They could be repackaging it for all I know. But My Favorite Year, which I absolutely love. The one with Peter O'Toole and Mark Lynn Baker. It's not Sid Caesar, but it's something similar to, you know, the live variety show on the week comedy sketch. And
the older aging actor.
Who's not Errol Flynn, but something of that ilk. And it's just a fun, fun piece of 50s nostalgia. Criterion, your favorite art house collections, put out the Clunny Brown film, as well as John Waters' Polyester. With the steaming chemistry of Divine and Tab Hunter from the early 80s. There you go. Also out, I will hopefully be getting these next week, the two more films from Andy Sedaris, Guns and Do or Die, from the man who gave us Malibu Express and Hard Ticket to Hawaii, among others.
Well, actually, speaking of DVD.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I told you or not, but a couple weeks ago, you know, Indiana Comic Con.
Oh, yes.
Was here.
Yes. Did you go?
Yes.
And did you meet people?
We met people and spent money.
And
all I can say is, thank God I had a case settle recently. That kind of made up
Was it the Richmond thing?
Yeah, it kind of made up for the stuff we ended up spending all our money on. I met a gentleman named Neil Adams, who is a famous comic book writer, and bought some very expensive artwork from him. It is the classic book he wrote, Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Ah.
Because it's two of my favorite
icons
right there. So he autographed it, and I went to the Great Frame Up just a couple blocks from here and spent as much on the frame as I did the picture.
It's great to be here with Superman, but what if we get to one of those Lex Luthor flashbacks? Round 11, Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Sorry, Richard Pryor fighting Muhammad Ali.
And I was at Comic-Con. You have the guys who are still like, tons of movies on DVD.
You've seen them.
Yeah. And so there was one guy who had like a stack of the Japanese, like midday, Monday through Friday, after school kind of Gamera, Johnny Sacco and his Flying Robot, all those, Ultraman.
The ones who, the ones who aren't Godzilla.
Yeah, all those series. And so I saw it and immediately had this, oh my God, here's Abdullah, 12 years old. Here's my Space Giants, I'll take that. Here's my Ultraman, I'll take that. Here's my Spectre Man, I'll take that. Oh, Carrie, the musical.
Oh, wow. Betty Buckley.
Yes. It's like, you know what? I am going to take this because I have a very good friend of mine. We basically grew up together. And every year, we give each other kind of joke gag Christmas gifts.
Yeah, I got you one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
He has not forgotten, I know.
No, I haven't. No, that
day will come.
Thou shalt have thy day. You know?
I got him Superman 3 and 4 on DVD.
Oh, look, it's a Golden Globus production. You shouldn't have. Oh, look, here's the one that got Alexander and Ilya Sulkin, the rights taken away. Oh, wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, you see, we're playing with swords in this show. I'm watching my back.
So, no, Carrie the Musical. So I haven't watched it yet, but...
Oh, gosh. I might have to borrow that.
I'll definitely make sure you borrow it before I... Because a buddy of mine, he gave me Deliverance last year.
Okay. All right. So that's a punchline of a film. I understand that. It's a film famous for the one scene. It's a great film nonetheless. It really is. I wrote a psychology paper about the roles that everybody had to switch halfway through that film. That's why, we've talked before, when Ned Beatty dies, especially a morning show here in town, that's all they're going to talk about. Yeah. There's all that's going to play. You know him from Superman. I loved him in Network on top of the thousand of other things that Ned Beatty has done.
I also love him in Charlie Wilson's War.
Yes, and Lasso from Toy Story 3, and just, and he's gotten Emmy nominations. He's just he played Big Daddy, which I wish somebody had filmed. So, anyway, no, nothing wrong with Deliverance. But yeah, let me borrow that. And bring the movies back you borrow from me years ago.
Hey, you know exactly where they are.
I need to come visit.
Yeah, there you go.
Challenge has been put out. So anyway,
trust me, the lovely Mrs. Shabazz would always be happy to see you.
Oh, I know. Yes. We will arrange that. So anyway, that's all happening out on video. By the way, Mill Creek Entertainment, I believe, is putting out an Ultraman box set, like super colossal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because there were like a lot of them.
And I believe, actually, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.org.
Let me get the legal ID while I pass the album, please.
Yes, Ultraman, the complete series. Wow.
How much?
Well, we don't talk about prices here on public radio.
It's public radio. Let's say if I was going to make an equivalent of the pledge amount.
I'll tell you, it's about. Oh, that's from a while back. Let me try that. That's a C+.
See, folks, this is your pledge dollars at work. You have a question, Matt Sosi can get you answered.
That's right. The complete. Oh, Blu-ray of the complete series, complete original Japanese broadcast edits. 28-page booklet. Yeah, so that's a.
So would it be like a? Is it a tote bag? Is it a calendar?
All right, fine. It's $50.
Okay,
but yeah, that's yeah. So anyway, the complete series on Blu-ray. So if you're into that sort of thing, let's head over to IU Cinema Saturday afternoon. And actually, I'm glad that they're showing this because I just watched this week, courtesy of Film Movement. But the 2018 drama, The Third Wife, set in 19th century Vietnam, when you, of course, could not only have multiple wives, but this one could be 14. It was a different time and a different country. So it shows the beauty of the country. She goes into a there's not only the role that she has to play with her spouse, mm-hmm. but also with the other spouses.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. And, of course, at that time, if you gave birth to a boy, you kind of moved up the charts a little bit. So it does address that as well.
And just so people know that this is what century is this, Vietnam?
19th century Vietnam.
Yeah, so there is no Ride of the Valkyries music.
No,
not hear Forrest Gump soundtrack.
No, yes. It's if you need what was lovely Bianca Slagle,
yeah.
and Kobe Slagle, of course, of emeritus fame, always said, if you hear CCR, that's the film telling you your movie is set in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I said, if you can't afford CCR, you play Canned Heat up to the country, on the road again. And of course, if you need to know a film is set in Boston, The Dropkick Murphys. And if you need to know a film is set in London, London Calling by The Clash.
Yep.
So there you go. But no, this is a really good drama, and it's playing 4 o'clock Saturday the 21st at IU Cinema. And then filmmakers and IU alum Riley Dismore and Catherine Crump are scheduled to be there Saturday night at 7 o'clock, I should say, for the world premiere of their films Rolling and Rebel Girls. Sunday the 22nd, La Bonheur at 1 o'clock from 1965. And then at 4 o'clock from 1988, the 2019-2020 Audience Choice Film Series, Big.
Hmm.
Tom Hanks' first nomination.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's right. Joseph, Robert Loggia. Robert Loggia on the keyboards.
No, they were playing Herschel. They were playing Chopsticks.
Yep. So that is Sunday the 21st, September 23rd, Monday the September 23rd at 7 o'clock, the 2019 drama Jezebel with Numa Perrier, writer-director there, Nathie Betty Davis, Henry Fonda film.
Which, by the way, I'm glad you reminded me of that date because I have to go online and buy some more Western films this week.
More Western films?
Yes. Monday is my father's birthday.
So
either get Mr. the...
You can give John Wayne, or do you give him the Jim Brown, Fred Williamson Westerns?
You know
what? Take a Hard Ride.
You know what? I don't think I ever got him. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. It's Take a Hard Ride. So, again, this is how the show works.
This, ladies and gentlemen, these are my pledge dollars at work.
So this was the second collaboration of Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, and Jim Kelly. Not the Giants, or not the Bills quarterback. We're talking Black Belt Jones, Jim Kelly. This was after Three the Hard Way, so they had to take a hard ride. Lee Van Cleef is also in this film, Barry Sullivan. Jim Brown is basically the John Wayne of the group. He's the sturdy lawman type who's going to take the money and deliver it. And then Fred Williamson thinks he's Doc Holliday. Actually, that's the better comparison. Not Tombstone. Wyatt Earp. That's right. Yeah, Jim Brown is Wyatt Earp. Fred Williamson is Doc Holliday. You know, he's slick and got the cigars and is fast with cards and, you know, ladies' man. And then you have Jim Kelly as the mute kung fu expert. And it's just, it's an odd Western, but it's a fun Western.
And that shall be his birthday present.
There you go. So
the Earl of Douglas has been discomfited.
So that is, and yeah, so check out the better than their sequel, One Down, Two to Go. Two Down, One to Go. Anyway, Tuesday, September 24th at IU Cinema, Numa Perrier, who will be there Monday, will be speaking at 5 o'clock on Tuesday the 24th. And then the 1962 film Cleo from 5 to 7, not that Cleo, at
Cleo?
7 o'clock, not Cleopatra Jones. Thursday, September 26th, Clemency at 7 o'clock, and then Jezebel on Friday the 27th at 7 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock on Friday the 27th, the 20th anniversary screening of the comedy But I'm a Cheerleader. Working Girls on September 29th at 1 o'clock, Clemency at 4 p.m., okay, over at the Tibbs Drive-In this weekend. Oh, yes, also opening this weekend. You didn't ask for it. I didn't ask for it. But he made it. Rambo Last Blood.
Okay. It's funny you bring
I'm
that
thinking
up.
I'm guessing he's dying in this one, which, you know, his character was originally supposed to in the first film.
As you and I were in the elevator chatting about another film that you had to put your Dr. Seuss-y jacket badge on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me put my jacket on. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in time for an impromptu session with Dr. Seuss-y, film therapist. Abdul is my longest patient, my longest client, longest running client. Now, yes, this reminded you, Abdul, of a cinematic experience you had this past week.
Yes. I just happened one of those rare moments. I was home on a Sunday and was just sort of mentally burnt out from going over lines, and we'd been in Chicago the day before at a graduate school reunion. So I decided to just take a couple hours just to decompress.
Okay. Now, before we go further, this was on TV. This was not in your possession, right?
Right.
So if you came across it.
Yes.
You didn't plan on this. I have been known to, especially this time of year, if I miss films that were out earlier in the year, I will rent those out of morbid curiosity, because that is my job, and saying things to myself like, how bad can this be? And Rambo is one. And this is the connection. You forget how good the first film is because you're thinking about all the other films that have followed. So, Abdul, what film did you try to watch to emotionally, physically decompress?
Death Wish 4.
Why would you do that? Wow. Not two, not three.
But
four. Four was on. Had to be in what, Spike?
It was one of the guy channels.
My God.
Why'd you kill everybody in the house? Because they was home. Basically, why'd you watch it?
It was there. You were on the couch. I'm guessing you were situated. You weren't moving. And then you felt like you were in the Clockwork Orange straitjacket.
It's like, okay, I've invested 15 minutes in this. I gotta see this through.
So,
and the plot,
you're right.
And the plot in Death Wish 4.
Crackdown.
Let's put it this way.
Is that the, yeah.
No, let's put it this way. You know how they spelled escapism in Death Wish 4? E-X-I-T. So we'll start with that. He is, Charles Bronson's character is approached by this quote-unquote wealthy millionaire who wants to go after his girlfriend's daughter dies of a drug overdose, and so this wealthy millionaire reaches out to him and say, hey, I can give you all the files on all these other people. And actually, there are quite a few people. What's his name?
Danny Trejo. Danny Trejo is in this. Kay Lenz plays his girl. John Ryan, I believe, is the businessman.
And the guy who, African-American who played in Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, that's your category. That's not.
Yeah.
Star Trek, not black actors.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
was in there
uh-huh.
as a younger guy as well. And it was just god-awful, horrible, bad, but I just could not stop until it was over.
Wow. So yeah. How much of it did you want? The whole thing?
I'd say about 80% of the whole thing.
Wow.
I missed the part where the daughter dies from the drug overdose and the millionaire guy reaches out to
yeah,
him.
So yeah, so directed by J. Lee Thompson, not Michael Winner. Yeah, so
See, here's the funny thing. I saw Death Wish 1 and 2. Never saw 3.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, 3 will cleanse your palate. 3
okay.
is bat spit crazy. So the first film, much debated. Say what you will about it. You know, it's
It's that genre, and I teach a class like mass media at the University of Indianapolis.
Right.
I always tell my students, if you want to know what the big cultural debates were at the time, look at the popular entertainment.
Yep.
You know, look at the books. Look at what was on television. Look at what was in the movies.
Yeah, and so
and your Death Wish is your
Death Wish, and this is 3 years after Dirty Harry, about taking justice and, you know, about being
crime get out of control,
right?
And people being soft on criminals.
So and in this case, you know, it was Bronson and people. So I'm always I'm fascinated by this film series, and I own the first three because I'm a masochist. You know, it's too expensive to buy Death Wish 4. But I found out years ago, a while back, and this really bugged me because last year, because the remake of Death Wish, which was the worst film of that year, originally, long before, when because it's based off of a novel that was later converted into a film, but originally, the film was going to be directed by Sidney Lumet, the man who gave us 12 Angry Men, Network, Prince of the City, Dog Day Afternoon, great director, and it was going to be Jack Lemmon. That's interesting, right? Because I'm still waiting for a Death Wish to have a normal looking person in it, not an action star. I think if you did Death Wish today, I'd want Bryan Cranston or Paul Giamatti. That's the type it's supposed to be.
Basically, what you want is Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
No, but even before that, but he had kind of an action with, you know, Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile. So he sort of had a leading man look about him. This is not a slight on the appearances of Cranston and Giamatti, but he's supposed to be an every guy. And instead they you know, I say everyone's favorite cinematic architect, Charles Bronson. So and everyone's favorite liberal architect, Charles Bronson. And people made fun of the fact that, you know, it's him, it's like, you know, what next? Clint Eastwood is a chef. But I liked it. It did press Bronson to have to actually act.
And I did jokingly say, like, Death Wish 4. Now, if I remember the premise of Death Wish 1, it's a wife and daughter, then war family. Like, is he run out of family yet?
Right. Well, so, wife dies in the first, daughter's institutionalized. Second, they go to L.A., daughter's raped and killed. Well, she jumps out of a building,
yeah,
and crap. And that leads to, and it's, Death Wish 2 is an ugly, ugly film. It is a not pleasant film at all. Jill, and yes, young Lawrence Fishburne and Jill Ireland's in it. The third one, he goes back to New York, even though it's shot in London. It has that weird, it's like, isn't this? It's not quite the studio,
yeah,
and it's not quite New York, but it's there. So he goes back to New York, and he cuts a deal with one of the police officers, played by classic that guy Ed Lauder, and it's just cartoonish. I mean, more cartoonish than Crackdown. And Edgar Wright is in it, and I think, you know, there's bazookas and knocking out of teeth. I mean, it's cartoonish at best. It's just an insane film.
I may have to watch that.
No, you should. This is have a couple cocktails and some pizza, and then watch it.
Can I have pizza and chocolate?
Whatever stimulus you need, you know, a pint ice cream, whatever. So, but yeah, no, it's a crazy film, and it's more entertaining than 4 and 5. So Abdul,
there was a 5.
There was a 5.
Are you sure?
I'm gonna check that just to make sure. But yeah, I'm almost certain there was, and I think I watched it. Yeah, there was a Death Wish 5.
Really?
Yeah, this was
he goes
the face, 1994, the Face of Death. And he was old and puffy then. Oh, God, Leslie Ann Down, I forgot. Michael Parks, Saul Rubinick. God, this has the people in it.
So is Death Wish 5 kind of like the Clint Eastwood last Dirty Harry movie with the film?
Oh, the Deadpool.
Deadpool?
No, this is worse than that.
Okay.
This is 94, so this is 7 years after Death Wish 4.
Okay.
This, yeah, this
Deadpool was like 88.
Deadpool was 88, so that's a 17-year run with
four films.
So, but yeah, I'm sorry, Abdul, that you had to see Death Wish 4. It is not your fault, and it's not your wife's fault.
No, she was not present. This was all strictly on me.
Yeah, that's
I accept accountability and responsibility for my actions.
So I would say, obviously, cleanse your palate. Not necessarily with Death Wish 3, but something to treat yourself right after having to sit through that.
I think I'm going to go watch Trumbo again.
There you go. Since I mentioned. Seriously, I want to read the book and start and try to adapt it. Because the other part is, it's he gets away with it, but not like the not like Vincent Gardenia and Bronson at the end of the first film. So, but yeah, still waiting for a non-action star to star in Death Wish. No thanks to Eli Roth. No thanks to Dino De Laurentiis. Because when Dino De Laurentiis was going to produce the film, both Lemon and Lumet went, "No, we're done. We're out." So
I just go dig a Walter Matthau.
See, I like the there was that period where he was sort of an action star, Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3, Charlie Varick, Laughing Policeman. It was not bad.
Bad News Bears.
That was not an action film. Well, different action. So yeah, I hope you're feeling better.
Oh, much better.
Good. Okay, so yeah, Rambo Last Blood. That's another one. First film is really really good.
And that's actually part of the reason why I end up watching Death Wish, because I think that same day or evening, Rambo, the first one.
First Blood, yeah.
First one was on.
Yep, pretty good. Supposed to die at the end, folks, but somebody decided to make money instead. So anyway, screen one is Rambo Last Blood and Angel Has Fallen.
Olympus Has Fallen.
Angel Has Fallen.
Okay.
Or Angel.
Angel.
So yeah, that's happening. Screen two, Hustlers and Don't Let Go. Okay.
By the way, Hustlers is a very misleading title. I just thought I'd get that out there.
Okay.
This is not what I expected.
Right. Okay, screen three is just showing It Chapter 2. Okay. Is Mrs. Shabazz like the It films?
I think she would.
Okay. She's not seen Chapter 1?
I think she saw like the old one, but I hear Chapter 2 is actually more intense than the first one.
Well, what they do is... And I think this one's longer, but you know, the first film is them as kids, and this one is them as adults. And I know the mini series, they it was switched back and forth, which I believe that's how the novel's written, but that's never really stopped anybody.
Yeah. Now what I might do, which I have done before, and actually I think I consulted you on this many many years ago, is my wife and I could not decide on which movie to go see, so we decided to go see them both, and they were about 10 minutes.
That's good. That's how you plan. Yep.
And so she went to go see her crap, and I went to go see...
You're not crap.
I went to go see my Thinking Person's movie.
That's right.
And we were all good.
Text from Mrs. Shabazz in 3, 2. I like that movie. That's actually happened. Screen 4, Ad Astra, and the...
That's right, it did happen.
Right? So, Ad Astra and the Art of Racing in the Rain, the Kevin Costner voice in the dog racing movie. Both speed? I don't know. Why would you pair those two? Same studio?
Are we at an Academy Award winning time yet?
Not
we
yet. Still got one more month.
Okay.
Anyway, that's over at the Tibbs. At the Skyline, you have Rambo and Angel Has Fallen. Okay. Yeah. So that's happening over at the drive-ins. Oh, one other film of note that I got to watch recently on Film Movement, and this is a great example of it could be a new film to you, even if it's not a new film. But Film Movement put out a 1973 French comedy known as The Mad Adventures of Rabbi Jacob. Hold on a second. I want to make sure I have that.
You know what? I think I might actually have seen that.
Really? So this is a story of a businessman, kind of a bigoted kind of a white collar Archie Bunker, who is who witnesses a kidnapping and interrogation of an Arab revolutionary, and he and the revolutionary are on the run. And from these hitmen, and they both go into disguise as rabbis and are mistaken for rabbis who are supposed to officiate a wedding in a heavy Jewish section of Paris. That's the film. And it's directed by Gerard Horry and stars, pardon my French, Louis de Funès. I hope I'm saying that right. Sorry. But I knew nothing about these. And watching it... It was a rated G film. I didn't know it was released by 20th Century Fox back in 73. But the tone of this caught me off guard as far as how extreme it was, over the top in its and its characters and its mannerism. And it takes 40 minutes for the storylines to connect and kick in. And then once I got into the second half of it, because you have the businessman's daughter is getting married, and then there's the rabbi who's coming from New York to Paris, and the assassination political plot.
In a weird way, I think I actually may have seen this before.
I had never seen this before, and so once we get into the second half, and there's a lot of physical comedy, and there is a moment that I laughed out loud in spite of myself. It's the when you're driving when you start to move your car with the gas pump in the tank, and this time it pulls the section of the car off, and I laughed out loud. So mission accomplished. You know, if a film made you laugh one time, it's better than not laughing at all. So, but it was just I think maybe because, like you, we were working on Shakespeare, and I've been seeing some heavier stuff lately, and then just did not see this coming. So it's fascinating, and I wondered, of course, I have to do research on this, of why the French love Jerry Lewis. And I saw this guy, and I talked to a friend, and the star of it, Louis de Funès, is a national treasure. And huge star in France. And I looked through his filmography, what he has in common, he never tried to make it in Hollywood.
Hmm.
Didn't have to. He was constantly working in France. He was doing films from the 40s to the early 80s. And it was just, it was like Benigni energy watching this. Well, so after watching it, then I find out this film was nominated for a Golden Globe in foreign film. It was released by 20th Century Fox. Didn't know that. The other thing, and in reading an essay about the film, yes, I read the liner notes of DVDs and Blu-rays that are sent to me. But this was a very popular film amongst the Jewish community because it didn't bring up the Holocaust. Mm. It didn't bring up Israel. And of course, the idea is the bigoted man sees things in a different light. And as he's posed as a rabbi. And so it wraps together nicely in a very silly bow. But I think if I remember reading right, the film came out about a week after the Munich.
Yeah, 1972.
Games. So, and at that time, people just wanted to laugh. And so it's a fascinating note. And I didn't know that while watching it, but then reading it, that's one of the reasons why it became a huge hit in Europe. So, yeah, it's out on Blu-ray from Film Movement Classics, The Mad Adventures of Rabbi Jacob.
Wow.
Yeah, see? Again, folks, 1-800-233-0020 or go to WFYI.org. Where else can you hear Ad Astra and The Mad Adventures of Rabbi Jacob and Death Wish 4? That's what Abdul and I do here on Film Sociology. So, also, I didn't get a chance to mention this on the show last week, but Jimmy Johnson, not the coach, not the Chicago Blues man, but
the sausage guy?
What? Muscle? No, that's Jimmy Dean.
No, it's not. That's a sandwich person.
You're a sandwich person.
No, that's a sandwich person.
No, this is Jimmy Johnson, the musician from Muscle Shoals.
Okay, I'm thinking Oh, that's Jimmy Johns.
You stop. You also get this. No, but Jimmy Johnson, the Muscle Shoals studio musician, this is the man that played with everybody from Aretha to Wilson Pickett. He passed away on September 5th. Yeah, I paid tribute to him on the show. So what? But it's also a reminder. There's a great documentary from 2013 called Muscle Shoals, and it talks about
the whole music studio and
yes, and what these guys worked on, and they do. Yeah, it was Greg Allman, Bono, Jimmy Cliff, the Rolling Stones. This is a man that recorded, engineered a couple songs for the Rolling Stones. Alicia Keys, Percy Sledge, Steve Winwood. It's a fun if you I'm one of those that I love it, like 20 Feet from Stardom and Standing in the Shadows of Motown, when session players are finally able to tell their story, because Berry Gordy wouldn't do it for them. But it was just a reminder because of Jimmy's passing to go check out Muscle Shoals. That is a fun documentary. And then we have one other dead person we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Iranian-born Hollywood screenwriter Mardik Martin died at the age of 84. A man who co-wrote Mean Streets, Raging Bull, New York, New York. Valentino, the bizarre Ken Russell film about Rudolph Valentino. He also wrote New York. I mentioned New York, New York. Did The Treatment for The Last Waltz, the concert documentary Scorsese directed about the band. His last appearance was a 2008 documentary, Marduk, Baghdad to Hollywood. And then 2014 film he directed called The Cut, about an Armenian man surviving the Armenian genocide. But had a great ear. And I watched Mean Streets again this past Thursday, Harvey Keitel. This was the film Scorsese did after working with Roger Corman on Boxcar Bertha. And this introduced a lot of people to Robert De Niro as well as Harvey Keitel. This was the same year De Niro had did Bang the Drum Slowly, where he played a slow-witted catcher, New York Yankees catcher from the South. So between that and playing Johnny Boy in this, but the fact is this gentleman from Baghdad had a great ear for street dialogue, and that's what he gave us in Mean Streets and Raging Bull. So thank you, sir. There you go. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well.
What did you watch before Death Wish 4? Because that's hard. Have you seen anything new recently? Because I know you've also been occupied with stuff.
I've been to the movies lately. I mean, like I said, I think the last film, what did we see? Of course, we saw Avengers Endgame this summer.
Yes.
And I went and saw something without my lovely wife because it was not, I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't one of her kind of films, which always brings up the debate. If you go see a movie without your spouse and don't tell them, are you technically cheating on them?
No. I've learned over the years that it doesn't hurt to ask, even if you're 99.99% sure of the answer. Concerts and movies are kind of like that.
I can see for concerts, because that's kind of a big,
right,
a big deal. I'm trying to remember, what did I go see? Like I said, it was a lot of Marvel superhero stuff. And I did go see this spring the documentary about the moon.
Oh, Apollo 11.
Apollo 11.
Okay, all right.
Which was actually really, really good.
Cool.
That I liked. And I told my wife, that's not your kind of film, sweetie. So don't.
And while he's looking at that, again, IndieBardFest.com for tickets and information.
Oh, yeah, Spider-Man Far Away From Home.
Okay. Do they... that's right, because he's in Europe. He's in England. And
we saw that together.
Aunt May hasn't figured it out yet?
She's figured it out, but...
won't tell him?
Won't tell him. I thought it was interesting with how Jake Gyllenhaal did the Mysterio.
Okay. Cool. So,
yeah.
All right. As we mentioned, IndieBardFest.com is running the 17th through the 27th of October. We're at the District Theater on Mass Ave, formerly Theater on the Square. And, of course, Abdul and I are both involved in Henry IV, Part 1. He is playing the notorious HIV.
In blackface.
In blackface. Anyway, and I'm playing Falstaff, and I'm padded. I don't have to put on weight for it. They wear it for me. So.
You wear it very well.
Thank you. Thank you. It's something you can't unsee. It's like if the Michelin man starred in Altered States, that's kind of what the bodysuit looks like.
And it makes you guys feel better. When we first kind of ran through part of the first act, I was amazed at how quickly the play moves. Because I know a lot of times people think, oh, my God, it's Shakespeare. It's just a bunch of people standing around.
And it's going to be 4 hours long.
4 hours long, talking in a corner to some skeleton head while your girlfriend's gone crazy and her dad's hiding behind the curtain and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
That's Hamlet.
Yeah, look, there's some trees moving over here and bubble, bubble, boy, toil and trouble. Oh, look,
now that's Macbeth. Now you're just all over.
Now I just got knifed in the back by some fairy named Oberon, you know. I get it. But, no, Henry the Fourth moves very fast, very quick. In the first act, you're like, "Wow, that's whoa!"
Mm-hmm.
And it is not hours of endless, pointless dialogue.
Although you have some monologue in.
Of course, I will say this: one of the best speeches is when His Majesty at that very end of the first act.
We're gonna plot splain to you a little bit. The story is, of course, Abdul is king. And he's king in the show, but he's dealing with
issues
in his castle, issues in his country, and issues with his son and his kid, who's going to grow up and become Henry V. Likes to hang out at taverns and likes to run around with ladies of the morning, noon, and night, and especially likes to go bar hopping with a bloated fat man played by yours truly. And as Glenn Dobbs, our director, explained, he asked us on the first read-through, why do people like Downton Abbey? I'll answer that, Abdul. I saw you wrinkle your nose. Oh, now you're giving my look. But this, and I of course mentioned Downton Abbey's father and mother is also known as the series Upstairs Downstairs because it is upstairs and downstairs. And this is the Shakespeare equivalent of Upstairs Downstairs because prior to that, a lot of the plays were about lords and ladies, and you had to have a title and you were dignified. And this time we're in the gutter.
Yeah, we're seeing real people as they are in medieval England.
So you have castles and dive bars in the same show.
Literally, yes. So, and just for the record, I am a castle person. Thank you very much. I'm a house medieval person.
Not doing that. Nope.
I'm a house rabbit.
We sick? No. We tired? We slapping our son?
Yeah.
You got that because you're with him. So, that's the play. And, we've been working on this, as you mentioned earlier, so I think the show's going to come in about 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, yes, I know, and the beauty of Shakespeare is that you can cut it and adapt it, and it's open, and it's open for interpretation. But you're going to see the thing that we still do Shakespeare to this day is because it's stories and behavior that's universal and it's still happening today.
Think about it, folks. A guy who's in charge of something who's very disappointed in his son.
Yeah, and somebody who's well-to-do, but he's hanging out in dive bars at night with unsavory characters who are in it for themselves. Hello.
Imagine that.
So anyway,
and imagine a guy who has the whole world in the palm of his hand and has to spend all his time trying to hold on to it.
Yep. So that is Henry IV, Part One.
Hey, not bad for stuff that's almost 700 years old.
Okay, there you go. Along with Hamlet, The Tempest. That's a kids production, and the original play, Lear's Shadow.
Otherwise known as Forbidden Planet.
Yes, a Forbidden Planet. Exactly, Forbidden Planet. So we run October 17th through the 27th, and there's evening shows and matinees and all that good stuff at the there's also the Basile Theater and Indy 11 and the District Theater. So there's three locations, so you could spend a fun weekend on Mass Ave seeing Shakespeare and eating and drinking. And I believe we're doing some post-show appearances at the bookstore and the brewery.
Books and Brews.
So as soon as I get the suit off.
And by the way, Bardfest is brought to you by the law firm of Lewis & Wilkins and Indie Politics.
Ah, fancy that. There you go. I just auditioned. No, this has been a lot of fun.
Well, I do have to ask you, when you heard that, did that shock you or surprise you?
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm just, however, it's still called Henry IV Part One. It's not a golf tournament or a tennis tournament.
Yeah, because when I went to my law partners, like, hey, we had a sponsor Bardfest. They're like, huh? What? Shakespeare? Why? Like, okay, what's going on? Like, I'm in it. Okay, sure. Here we go.
Right.
Like, thanks.
Trust me. I wish there was a Sun King Blues house party presented by Maxine's Chicken and Waffles. No money, but I won't starve. So
hey, listen to the Hyde Park Steakhouse Radio Hour.
There you go. We're giving you suggestions of what. And the other thing, folks, I don't want to spoil this for you, but Abdul and I have one line exchange in this play. So if you're expecting a stage version of this, sorry, not happening.
Trust me, our director would not allow us to rewrite the Shakespeare stuff. Because believe you me, I would have.
Right. Although it's been, I think we were doing fun with stage combat. I heard you quoting Stripes as you were shoving me.
Yes.
For the black guys to help the white guys.
And by the way, it's some very good choreographed stage combat.
Yeah, that's been fun working on that. So we've done a couple days of, because we're handling weapons, dull weapons, but weapons nonetheless.
That can still hurt you.
They can still hurt you. If you're, the fact that you're going to see a battle sequence in a very small space, it's going to be right in your face, very quick, very intense. My case, very funny. It has been fun to do that training with everybody. And even though I have a knife that it looks like something out of Outback Steakhouse, very dull. If you have cheese, I will crumble it. If you have toast, I will spread it.
The knives of the press are sharp, but trust me, his aren't dull.
But so this has got it's got comedy and action and family issues and political intrigue. This is a full night of theater in it's happening at Indie Bard Fest.
And the King of Zamunda.
Not saying that, although if you see the pictures, go online, go to IndieBardFest.com.
My son works.
Or go to Abdul's social media. Yeah, you'll see the only thing missing was a cloak and the
lion's head.
And the rose petals. Although, I did try telling Brian Hartz, who is, of course, playing Hamlet, that I think he should have Tombstone for his Yorick, except he'll steal the show. Speaking of which...
Or the Screaming Skull.
Oh, God, that's so bad. Speaking of which...
Calling all stations. Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes for the big broadcast.
Yep, that's Saturday nights at 8 o'clock on MeTV. And this was... So when Abdul and I first met, and I remember poking my head in the station and... because I had worked with the two previous morning shows that were long gone, and here's this new guy, and I said, do you need a film guy? And he offered me a seat, and the first couple weeks we were figuring each other out. What is he like? What does he don't like? How does he approach stuff? And one of the first things we connected on was Svengoolie out of Chicago, because he was from there, and I got to see him.
And I can't remember what it was that actually... ignited that conversation, but as soon as we're like, oh my God, my brother.
Right. So it was that. It was like Svengoolie, Richard Pryor, and Monty Python. And that's the Louis. I think this is the basis of a beautiful friendship. But anyway, that is Saturday nights on MeTV. He's also, I should mention, Svengoolie is to be honored by the city council for his 40th anniversary. This is from the Chicago newspapers. Alderman Raymond Lopez of the 15th District has proposed a resolution for the city council to honor Rich Coes, who plays Svengoolie, in honor of the milestone anniversary. And I know you're going to try to get in touch with him for your show on Indie Politics.
Yep. And actually, I remember because we interviewed him.
Yes. So that other story. So I got to interview Rich twice. And part of it was, so Abdul and I were in studio because we were grown men geeking out, because I had interviewed Rich back in 99. I somehow weaseled my way in the Channel 26, the U, and freelance. I mean, I have it somewhere in my archives, but he was a lovely man and gave me a shirt and a couple other things, and I just couldn't sell the article, and I had just moved to Indy. So when MeTV picked up Svengoolie, smart move, MeTV. I finally set up an interview with him. So I brought in Abdul, and we waited in the studio, and he never called. And I think later that day or the next day, I got this beautifully written apology letter. He never spaced out on interviews, so we rescheduled. And that was the problem, because Emma was in studio with me. We had to reschedule, and we were up against another show, yeah, another program that was scheduled to be in here. So we got about 15 minutes. And I remember, we let Emma do a couple questions. And then I know you opened because you impressed him. You still remember the very first Son of Svengoolie. Because Jerry G. Bishop, of course, the original Svengoolie. And then Rich took over with Jerry's blessing. What was the first Son of Svengoolie film in 1979?
In the year 2889.
That's a bad, bad film.
It was a bad, god-awful, horrible film. But you know what? It is one of my personal favorites.
And it was because, a long time ago, young people, there, and of course we were fortunate to still have Sammy Terry in Indianapolis. But every major city and minor city had
their Svengoolie guest,
their horror
feature
show host, and their kid show host, and all that. So, you grew up with Svengoolie. I grew up with Sir Graves Gasly out of Detroit, and I remember in the early 80s, Svengoolie was syndicated, and I was kind of stunned because I didn't know what Berwyn was.
Yeah.
That was funny. But in interviewing Rich, I believe it was Boston, San Francisco, Detroit, and a couple other cities, and I was curious about how he would, because I remember that there would be the intros after the commercial breaks, and while they weren't filmed like Chicago, it would be a voiceover of Rich as Sven, and he would tell each city, tell me a restaurant, tell me a neighborhood, a local celebrity, and it kind of localized the show, and apparently it didn't last that long. It felt like it had been a couple of years,
yeah.
But that was my introduction. Then, and when I moved to the Chicago suburbs in 95, he had just gotten back on TV. And anyway, but it was the start of that. So after our 15 minutes, and we have producers, try to imagine this, we're in a recording studio with a glass separating the other studio and then another glass separating another studio. But we had a producer knocking on the window. I don't remember if you can actually hear the knocking in our interview, but we're getting the finger hitting the the imaginary wristwatch going, you guys got to get out of there. So that was fun. But yeah, Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy Berwyn. With a music parody, it's a fun show.
And it's one thing. That's one thing he used to do was a big signature of his program. They would do little like parodies, sometimes of the movie or other things kind of going on.
Right.
For example, they did a parody of Irving Berlin's "Putting on the Ritz" they called it "Putting on the Boot," because in Chicago, when you didn't pay your parking tickets, they start
right.
putting the boot on your cars.
Yep.
And there was actually more in the early days. There was actually more political humor, Chicago-based, than you would imagine.
Yep,
because you always say, "Welcome to Chicago, the city that works, the council that doesn't."
And you had your Harry Carey's and your Mike Ditka's and those the Menards guy
and the Empire Carpet guy.
The Empire Carpet guy. Yep.
And the Hawaiian they did one song called "Go Transfusion." It was based on that old "Go Hawaiian" with the old Hawaiian punch.
Yep. So yeah, Svengoolie is on MeTV. Of course, next month is we're going into October. That's Sammy Terry's big month, so we'll have Sammy on the show. So this is what MeTV has going on Saturday nights, ladies and gentlemen. If you're not watching Channel 20 or WFYI Television, all three channels, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, The Three Stooges. Did you watch The Stooges as a kid?
I did because they were on right after Benny Hill.
Oh, at night?
Yes.
Okay, not no more. Okay, so there you go. So Three Stooges at 6, Wonder Woman at 7, Svengoolie at 8.
Star Trek after that.
Well, yeah, this weekend, Svengoolie 13 Ghosts, the original. Star Trek at 10. Ooh, Buck Rogers at 11. Yes on Aaron Gray, no on Tweaky.
But actually, I started watching that again.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It's really inexpensive, isn't it?
It's a very economically produced program.
Irwin Allen would say, that's cheap looking.
Yes,
12 a.m., The Invaders.
But I still was in love with Princess Ardala.
Yes. 1 a.m., Lost in Space. That's where my Falstaff scream comes from. Thank you, Jonathan Harris. 2 a.m., Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Or, as the old story goes, if the Robinson family was being terrorized by a green colander in Lost in Space, they would spray paint it orange, and it would terrorize the guys in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yep.
Irwin Allen was just that way. 3 a.m., Land of the Giants.
Which means you need a pencil to make a phone call.
Yeah. And 4 a.m., The Time Tunnel.
Oh gosh!
So if you're not working on Sunday or that's you can't 5 a.m. Sunday, Planet of the Apes.
That's right, the television series.
James Franciscus, because he's cheaper than Chuck Esten. So yeah, that's your MeTV on Saturday night. Congratulations to Rich and Sven for the being honored by the city council. That's fun stuff.
Yeah, I'll be sending him an email. Relatively soon, hey, Rich.
Look to indie politics stuff. Have you shown the lovely Mrs. Shabazz Svengoolie? Is that in her wheelhouse?
She's kind of seen it.
Not her. Really?
She's like, what is this? Sweetie, you grew up in Fort Wayne, so all the monsters and creatures you people dealt with were all hanging out on the street.
What do you mean by you people? So, yeah, that's happening there.
Yeah, no, she looks at me geek out, just like, really, seriously. It's totally hot sitcom life,
right? just let him have his thing.
He'll calm down.
He'll be fine. So, what's happening at indie politics? This is the other thing, folks. For years, Abdul and I have talked about doing a show or him doing a show of some kind. But that's evenings of rehearsal. And right now, knock on wood, the political world has not really intervened too much.
I mean, you've got I got some stuff going on, but most of that's kind of during the day,
right?
I mean, I got a couple of mayoral debate forum things that I gotta that are like on rehearsal night, so I gotta go hire somebody to
right
go cover what Joe and Jim are about to say for the 18th million time that I already know what they're gonna do, and so we're just. You know, trying to get to the mayor's race, and then...
And you're still wanting your pizza with no homeless people.
Exactly. And then next year is 2020, a presidential year.
The year we make contact.
Yes.
So...
Yeah. But, cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war.
Still working outside Nikki Blaine's telling people to calm down.
Trying to calm down.
Which you haven't had to do the last couple of years.
The last couple of years, everybody's been good.
It's like Knucklehead Saturday is not...
Parents are doing their job. No, cops are there. As I jokingly told my good friend, when I saw the white folks back... We're good.
That's the second Saturday, right?
Second Saturday.
Yeah, that used to be unofficially known as Knucklehead Saturday.
Okay, Knucklehead Saturday.
So.
No, everything's going well. So, good. Like I said, enjoying doing the Henry thing. It has been a challenge trying to balance everything with the whole schedule because, you know, rehearsal, you know, 3 hours a night.
Yep.
And that's like that 7 to 10 o'clock window.
But interesting enough, you said it helps you physically.
Actually, helps me sleep at night. Mm-hmm. Because I'm actually tired when I get ready to go to bed.
So when somebody on the street asks you, how can you sleep at night? Well, I rehearse for 3 hours, and then I lay down and close my eyes.
Oh, yeah, that and the big sack of money and two beautiful women. How do you sleep at night?
a couple other points from the question earlier, you know, sci-fi films with dad issues. Andrea from Greenwood writes Starship Troopers. Okay. And
the only daddy issue I guess you could say is when, like, the sergeant... Was like the dad for the kids. I was like, I expect when he kills the bug,
I expect
you to kill me. But
okay.
That's...
And Terry writes, perhaps, Tarkovsky's Stalker, and of course Star Trek II.
Okay, sure.
Sure,
I'll,
why
I'll play
not?
Along.
That's it.
Oh, but of course, the one guy. He was the young kid who was in. Well, not young. He's like 40 something now. Who was in Starship Troopers?
Casper Van Dien?
Yeah, usually he makes the Comic-Con circuits.
Yes. Yes, was he there when you were there?
He was there last year, not this year.
Okay. And when he's not doing straight to video,
yeah.
Spiritual sorta kinda, he's not quite Kirk Cameron, but he's doing films that are semi-similar at times.
Yeah.
Hey, work's work.
Hey,
that's what we do.
It's called get a check. I ain't hating on a brother.
That's right. So, all right. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, IndieBardFest.com for tickets. Or you can see Hamlet, Lear, Shadow, The Tempest. And, of course, you can see these two miscreants in Henry IV, Part 1.
See them as you have never seen them before.
You're darn right on that. So, our Henry IV performances are Friday the 18th at 8 p.m., Saturday the 19th at 2 p.m. We got to sleep. We got to go to bed early that night. Sunday, October 20th at 1 p.m. And then Thursday the 24th at 8 p.m. Saturday the 26th at 8 p.m. And then Sunday the 27th at 1 p.m.
So if you had not seen it with your own eyes, you would not have believed it.
You will believe, and Abdul can take direction.
Exactly.
And he does, folks. So. Abdul, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great always to be a guest on Film Sociology.
And I'm sure you're going to be back on fairly soon because we'll have the giant Bardfest Roundhouse.
Oh,
not Roadhouse.
Roundhouse.
That's a different thing. So, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. And IndieBardFest.com. Thanks for listening. 1-800-233-0020 or go to WFYI.org/give to support public radio goodness. And until next time, take care. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, a film podcast, here on WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!